Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Purpose Tune Podcast. The goal of my show is to create valuable content to broaden your knowledge, inspire you, and get you in the right mindset so that you can apply it in your own life to drive impact, generate meaning, and achieve your purpose. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Purpose Tune Podcast. My name is Kong Shang, and I am the host of this podcast. The goal of my show is to create valuable content to broaden your knowledge, inspire you to act, and get you in the right mindset so you can apply it in your own life to drive impact, generate meaning, and achieve your ultimate purpose. I'm very excited about today's guest. His name is Dan Gordon, or Coach Dan. Coach Dan has over two decades of coaching, bold entrepreneurs on an exciting journey into unlimited success. In workshops, coaching, and large venue speaking, Coach Dan blasts entrepreneurs past their limitations, providing new pathways to success that most never dreamed possible. Coach Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Kong. It's really a joy to be here.
Likewise. And thank you for spending some time with us to discuss about your profession and how you coach entrepreneurs to remove roadblocks, eliminate limitation to ultimately achieving their goals. Let's first get started. How did you get into this work?
Boy, in a lot of ways, I fell backwards into it, or maybe I fell forwards into it. So I'm going to give you a super brief background. I used to teach personal development courses. So I flew around the country and in Europe teaching these intensive 3-day slam bang seminars. Loved the work. It was never a full-time job, always a side hustle, but it's something that I just excelled at and really enjoyed. And so about 7 years ago, just jumping ahead a bit, 7 years ago, I had a marketing company and I made some mistakes in that company. Well, the big mistake that I made was that I hired a pathological liar. Mm-hmm. Right? And so I didn't know he was, you know, wasn't on his resume. And you know, at first it was going great because this guy, he was a great salesperson. Because if you have no intention of keeping your word, I mean, you can sell really well. And so we were closing business left and right and sideways. And it wasn't until I realized, oh, wait a second, hold on, something fishy is going on here. And I realized that nothing that he promised was even remotely possible. So I fired him, went back to all of my clients, told them what I had done. They're like, oh, that's nice. You're fired. And we want our money back. And so in a month, I lost $70,000. And I was deep in debt and I had what I can only call an emotional breakdown. Like I was literally on the floor in snot and tears saying, what am I going to do now? And it was at that time that somebody asked me, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I want to do the thing that I love, that I know I'm good at, that I've been successful at all my professional career in one form or another, and that is be a facilitator, a business coach, and more specifically, a transformational leader. And my friend was like, well, do that. I said, well, who's going to hire a business coach who just failed at business? Like, this is impossible. And she goes, I don't know, but just, yeah, if you want it, do it. And so jumping ahead, 8 months later, almost to the day that I was on the floor in snot and tears, I walked out on stage in Dallas, Texas, in front of a packed audience being paid $10,000 for my very first paid speaking gig. Mm-hmm. And so the story is really about overcoming our stories, overcoming my story. Mm-hmm. But the reason I was in marketing is because I had a story about being successful and I had to have some kind of successful company before I became a speaker or no one would, you know, would believe me. Mm-hmm. You know, when I lost everything and I thought, okay, I want to do this work, but I can't because I failed. No one's going to hire me. That's another story. And so it was in overcoming these stories that we tell ourselves, that I told myself, that I ultimately found just the love of my life in terms of my business. And actually, I found the love of my life in terms of love, in terms of relationship, because around the same time that I lost everything, my now fiance, Roslyn, came back into my life. We had known each other briefly. And so all these things came into focus because I realigned myself. And so getting into this work, the way I got into this work was by following my authenticity, because it was being inauthentic that drove me in all the wrong directions in an ego mindset. And this is why in the work that I do, in the sales that I teach authenticity in sales. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not tips and tricks and techniques. Mm-hmm. It's learning how to have a conversation with someone mm-hmm. in a way where you generate trust. And when you generate trust, people are a lot more likely to follow you mm-hmm. and to believe that you're on their side if you are. You know, and that's the essence of my approach to sales. So these methods, these techniques that have been around for a gazillion years that are all very, very teachable mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. because they're a one size fits all method of sales. I don't do that at all, because it's learning tools of manipulation. Mm-hmm. And I refuse to do that to anyone.
Right. Wow. That's such a powerful background of how this situation transformed the direction of, it sounds like the direction of your life, both professionally and personally. And it's what you just shared with me is aligned to the reason why I do this show, is to get people to tap into the truest, highest version of themselves mm-hmm. so that they can lead a meaningful life. And one of those ways is to tap into one's authenticity. And I can sympathize with how people can put their profits over their authenticity or things over what they perceive to matter over who they truly are.
Yeah.
And the essence of the show is really to get people to pause and reflect on their behaviors, their mindset, mm-hmm. and get them a chance to self-correct their course. If, you know, I've met so many entrepreneurs that are considered successful, making a lot of money, but they're miserable.
And I too.
Right. And you know that it's because they haven't lead a life of authenticity that's in alignment with who they are. Everyone mm-hmm. has an internal voice that's always speaking to them, but not everyone listens to it. Only a very few do.
And it's largely due to fear, right? So human beings are driven by fear. Mm-hmm. And there's two things that motivate us. We move towards something by pleasure, and we are moved away from something by pain or fear. Mm-hmm. Now, it would be great if those were equal, but they're not. Mm-hmm. Our drive to stay alive, our human survival system mm-hmm. is 75% of our actions. Right? So we are driven in a much more powerful way by fear to avoid pain mm-hmm. than we are driven towards pleasure. That's only 25%. So that means that if you want to move through your fears, if you want to develop a better relationship with your fears so they're not controlling you, it means that you have to engage in strict mental discipline. Mm-hmm. It takes a tremendous amount of mental focus to continually remind yourself that your resistance is due to a fear. Now, you're going to have a lot of stories. You're going to have a lot of reasons why those fears are true. Like, for perfect example, I was talking with someone the other day, and she was very interested in hiring me as her coach. Mm-hmm. And we talked for about an hour, and she's like, yeah, I really want to do this. And then we started talking about money. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, I can't afford that. And rather than saying what most people, what most salespeople will say is, well, what can you afford, or how can you afford it? Like, I knew that the money wasn't the problem. The problem was she was afraid of making a mistake. Mm-hmm. And I, for everybody listening, if you're in sales, and you are, because no matter what you do, you're in sales. Mm-hmm. Anytime somebody is resistant to your product or service, it's not about your value. It's about their fear. Everybody is afraid of making a mistake, because when we make a mistake, we do what? We beat ourselves up, mm-hmm. right? We look in the mirror in the morning and go, oh, I can't believe I did that. So her resistance was not about the fact that I'm expensive. It's about the fact that she was afraid she was going to spend the money, get no value, and then beat herself up about it. So when she said, I can't afford it, I said, I don't believe that. And I know it's not true. Mm-hmm. And it's very surprising to people when I say that. That's not the first time that I said that, because we all have a very big story around that. Because she said, hey, look, I can show you my bank account. Mm-hmm. I can show you that I don't have the money. And I said, oh, I don't doubt that the money is not in your bank. But that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is what you said, which is I can't afford it. And I said, it is in that mindset, those stories, that you are keeping yourself in a perpetual state of lack. Mm-hmm. And it's not that she could just say, okay, now I believe I have the money, and she would have the money, but everything starts with a mindset. And I said, how many times do you say that? A day, a week, a month, I can't afford it. And she thought, she said, you know what? I say that a lot. I said, I bet you do. So can you imagine going through life, telling yourself a story over and over and over again? You think you're going to make money walking around saying, I can't afford it, I can't afford it, I can't afford it? Of course not, because we create a reality based on our thinking. And so I gave her some suggestions. And a few weeks later, she had the money.
Can we dive a little deeper into that?
Yeah, sure.
Suggestions did you give her, mm-hmm. and how was she able to acquire the money?
So you have all the money that you need. As an entrepreneur, you have all the money that you need. It may currently be residing in other people's pockets, but you have all the money you need. You just have to get it out. You have to get it out of their pockets and into your pocket by being valuable first, authentic second, and persistent third. And the mistake a lot of people make is they are persistent first. And you have to be valuable to create the trust. If you're persistent, you're not creating trust. So if you think about it in the same way of like dating, right? If you find someone that you really want to go out with, and you call them up over and over again, and you're super persistent, that doesn't generate trust. You just come off as a weirdo. It generates the opposite. But if instead you get to know that person, you're authentic, you talk with them, maybe you don't ask them out at all. You just talk to them. You call them up and you have a couple conversations, or three or four or five conversations, and then say, hey, you know what? I'd really like to go out with you. I think you're pretty cool. Like, so you've generated that trust. So with her, there were some people that she was struggling with in terms of prospects. And I said, you know, what do you know about them? And she says, well, not a lot. I go, well, there's the problem, right? Get to know them.
Right.
And so now I'll give you some specific examples, and I'm going to share something with your audience in just a minute. These are responses to help you win sales. I call them the 25 plus responses to help you win any sale. And these aren't tricks and techniques. It's a communication style. And so one of the most powerful responses and statements that I use is, hey, I get it. And you would be amazed at how much rapport saying that means. So Kong, if you were to say to me, wow, Dan, it's too expensive, I just can't afford it. Instead of, well, what can you afford, or why not? Or I might say, hey, I get it. Yeah, I know the feeling. I know the feeling of wanting something and feeling like I can't afford it. You know, really wanting something bad and knowing how valuable it would be and feeling just, oh, so discouraged and maybe even a little shameful that I feel like I can't afford it. Are you feeling some of those feelings? Right? Is that what's going on? You're feeling like a little sad or frustrated or maybe even shame, right? And now we're having a conversation about you. We're having a conversation about what you're struggling with. Like, we're having a conversation what's actually happening in the moment rather than some bullshit thing about the money. Mm-hmm. And now we're starting to deconstruct what's going on for you when it comes to working with me. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, Dan, you know, I've hired other coaches and I felt really bad because I didn't get value out of it. You know, I got screwed over. I'm like, yeah, I know that feeling. I've hired coaches that have turned out terrible and I've gotten screwed over. That I'm really shameful about that. Can't tell you the tens of thousands of dollars I've spent on coaches that went nowhere, right? So now we're having an authentic conversation and we're both talking about the same thing. We're talking about our similar experiences. So now we're not on opposite sides of the table arguing. I'm not trying to get you to give me your credit card. We're on the same side of the table talking about our similar experiences.
Yeah.
And that all started with, hey, I get it.
Right. I think it's really acknowledging their concerns, mm-hmm. and putting ourselves in their shoe. Say, yeah. Hey, I see you, I hear you, and it's legitimate. Those reasons are legitimate.
Yeah. And it's also being open and sharing your own failures. Mm-hmm. And most people don't want to do that. They don't want to come off as being imperfect. And because if I'm the imperfect coach, you're not going to hire me. Mm-hmm. But you know what? That's so unimportant. Like, I am so unimportant in any conversation. And this is, for everybody listening, you are absolutely unimportant. When you are in a sales conversation, you are the least important person in that conversation. And if for a second you are thinking to yourself, how do I get this person to buy? You have already failed. In fact, if you think that, what you should do is say to the other person, look, I got to be honest with you. I'm thinking more about myself right now than I am thinking about you. So I want to turn that around. I just want to talk about you.
Right. Well, there's that concept of empathetic selling. Can you dive a little deeper into that?
It's pretty much what I've been sharing, in that the empathy is what the other person is experiencing. So sympathy is like you telling me like your dog got hit by a car or something. I go, oh, I'm so sorry. God, yeah, that's terrible. Right? That's sympathy. Empathy is, oh, God, man, it's so painful. How long have you had that dog? And oh, God, I bet you had all these experiences, but like, that must be heartbreaking. I know that. I know that heartbreaking feeling. Being empathetic, you can imagine like sitting on a park bench with someone and putting your arm around them and just saying, I got you. I understand. I'm there. I've been there. You're safe. Mm-hmm. But it's not, you can't do that tactically. You can't do that from a position of a strategy.
Right. So there has to be some level of emotional intelligence involved in that process, would you say?
That's very well said. And thank you for saying that, because emotional intelligence is key in sales. because every sale is made from emotion. Everything that you or anybody has ever bought was an emotional decision. Now, you may think it's intellectual, like if you're buying a, you know, an expensive camera and you think, well, I'm going to look at all the benefits of the camera and all the features of the camera, and I'm going to buy the best camera with the features that I need. But eventually you're going to find three or four cameras that are pretty similar. And you're just going to look at those cameras and go, I think I'm going with the Panasonic. Why? Right? Because it was an emotional experience.
Right. Yeah. I can resonate with the fact that people make decisions based on emotions.
Yeah.
All human beings, and we have emotions. And you know, there are some, you know, some logic component to the decision process, but
absolutely
majority of it is surrounded by emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of this concept of decency quotient?
No, tell me.
Yeah, so thanks for asking. It's actually a step further from emotional intelligence. And there was I stumbled across this article when I was just browsing through Harvard Business Review's blogs. And it's essentially this concept that it's measured based on someone's decision to choose how they're going to behave based on the intel that they've received. So, for example, Dan, I'm your boss, and I, you know, through assessments and whatnot, consider someone who is rated on high emotional intelligence. So I'm able to ask you questions to get you to share with me how you're performing with your job. Our initial, you know, our one-on-ones, we're on one-on-one, and I ask you questions like, you know, how's your day? You know, how's your job? You know, what do you consider some of the little success or wins throughout the week? And you're like, Kong, my week has been great. You know, this is how much I've accomplished. I'm very proud of myself. And then through my ability to ask questions, I'm able to get you to share, what are some of those challenges, Dan, that you're facing? I'm hearing a lot of good things, but I'm sure there's some roadblocks I can help remove.
Yeah.
You're hesitant at first because you're not sure whether you want to share some of those
roadblocks. Yeah, right.
Because that trust factor hasn't really been established yet. But you're like, you know, Kong seems like a decent guy. Sounds like, you know, he seems to be supportive of my work. So I'm going to share roadblocks. So you start sharing about a project you did that kind of, you know, didn't go the way that you wanted. And, you know, maybe a client that complained about your work. Took that information with me and I shared with HR. And then the next call, I lay out a performance improvement plan for you and say, Dan, based on what you've shared with me, sounds like you're not meeting the expectation of this role. So we're going to put you on a plan. And you're caught off by this this plan, and you're like, Kong, but I thought that by sharing some of these roadblocks that you would be able to help me, not report me to HR. And now you're on this plan, and then a couple months later, you're fired. My intent all along was not about supporting you; it was just get you fired because of whatever reason. I just didn't like it. So I am rated high in emotional intelligence, but low in decency quotient.
I see.
I'm able to get you to share information, vulnerable information.
Yeah.
And so what I choose to do with that information is where the decency quotient comes in.
Yeah.
So I see a lot of leaders, they may be perceived to their colleagues as transformational leaders, inspirational leaders. But until you get to work with them one-on-one, you really get to know what they're actually like, because they're really good at covering their blinds. They're getting people to see the best in what they do. But internally, they're not who they perceive to be.
Sure.
And you see that a lot in the consulting world, where people are very good at, just stepping into different dynamics that present them in the best light. But internally, if you really were to dig into who they are, they lack the decency factor. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that we have individuals like that holding some of the most powerful positions.
Yeah, it's I do my best not to demonize people in that way, because, you know, as you're talking about this, can I share what's on my mind?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that guy, like let's say you were my boss and you went through that and you got me fired, right? So currently our current legal climate is you can't just fire me. If you were to fire me, if I work for you and you're like, man, Dan is a terrible employee, he's out of here. Like, you know that I could like end up owning your business. I could sue you and like take you for everything. Right. So you have to do a runaround.
Right.
And so you have to be, you have to obfuscate your actual intention of that conversation. Now that doesn't make you indecent. It makes you afraid. Mm-hmm. And this is what I was talking about earlier, is that we are driven by our fear. 75% of our actions are based on fear. Right? Now, if instead you said, you know, Dan, I'm really concerned about you, man. I'm not seeing a lot of productivity. And here's the thing. I want you here. Mm-hmm. But if you don't want to be here, that's cool. Like, don't stay in a job that you don't love. Mm-hmm. If you don't love this, we can talk about what to do next. If you do love this, then we'll also talk about what's next, right? But something's got to shift, and it has nothing to do with you being a good employee or a bad employee. It has to do with you feeling connected to this work that you're doing here. Mm-hmm. So can we have a conversation about that? Mm-hmm. Right now, there's an opportunity for you to help me become a greater version of myself.
Exactly. And that's a great point to make. Because it allows the individual to come up with creative ideas on how they can better themselves, mm-hmm. room for improvement. And it's important when people are leaders that they come from a place of care and empathy. In fact, a lot of employees quit their jobs. Some of the top reasons are, one, a bad manager, and two, a toxic work culture.
Those are very victim-y things to say. And I know it's like, we're in a culture now, like, hey, don't blame the victim. But when I lost my business, right, I had a pretty good story about how this guy screwed me over. And if it hadn't been for this pathological liar, everything would have been fine. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, I hated my marketing company. I hate marketing. I'm just really good at it. Right. I want it out. Mm-hmm. Right. So what I knew, even when I was on the floor in snot and tears, that I had created this situation. And unless I was willing to take ownership of what I created, I was going to find myself in another situation where someone else was victimizing me. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you're in a work environment that feels toxic, understand you are the common denominator. Mm-hmm. You chose to be in that environment.
Right.
And you have a kind of, look at Dr. King, Gandhi, Mother Teresa. These are, what's that? Sorry, man, you just cut out.
Okay.
So look at people like Dr. King, Mother Teresa, Richard Branson. These are people who were major disruptors who said, hey, how things are isn't cool. So I'm going to be an agent of change. And if you are saying, oh man, I'm in this toxic work environment. Okay. Maybe it is, but you're in that environment. So you're part of the toxicness. And so what can you bring to shift that environment? If you have a manager who you don't like, well, maybe that manager doesn't feel supported by you. And maybe you're playing some game in unconsciously where your manager feels like your dad or your mom or your mean uncle or something, and you're being very resistant. Maybe that manager needs more support from you, and then he'll or she will back off. But if you choose to live in a way of thinking where all these things are being done to you, then you are living in a prison cell of your mind. And that's how you're going to live your entire life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get it. I mean, this is like where the Coach Dan comes in, right? It's about to like step away from the victim's mentality and say, look, you have the power to change your situation. We're not stuck in this behavior. Fair to say that, this work environment is toxic, or that you have the bad manager, but what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And that's where the power lies, is our ability to choose how we're going to handle the situation. And it's not up to them to dictate how we feel. It's up to us. Every one of us have the power to choose how to interpret a situation, change our perspective or change the situation so that we're better off.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot to be said in terms of the value of placing power on us and us taking the accountability and ownership to deal with the current circumstance.
Absolutely.
It's us at the end of the day, it is really up to us.
Yeah. It's when I'm teaching people to sell, and a client will come back to me and go, well, that person just wasn't ready. Mm-hmm. I'm like, don't blame your prospect because you sold them out. And they were like, wait, what? And I said, yeah, because they were talking to you, they were ready. Like, they wouldn't be having the conversation with you if they weren't interested in your product or service. So what happened is you got them to a point where they felt fear, and you didn't do anything to help them through that fear. So they said, I'm not ready. And rather than being persistent and relentless and going, hey, I'm not going to give up on you, you gave up on them because it was easier, because you were afraid of being pushy and all these other things. It's all about you. Mm-hmm. So we create our worlds. We are, if you think of it this way, Kong, every day we set up the chessboard and we set up all the pieces every way that we want. Like, so let's take, for instance, with my marketing company, the Big Time Group. Like, I set up the chessboard for life to checkmate me in three moves. Right? I hired the pathological liar. I did all of these things, right? So in three moves, I got checkmated and I could say, oh man, life is such a better chess player than I am. Right? And life's like, but you set up all the pieces. Shut up, right? And so this is what we do. Like, we don't set up the chessboard to checkmate us instantly. We give life three or four moves so we can have the alibi of saying, well, this happened to me. But when you step back and go, hey, you know what? I set up the chessboard. I put all these pieces in place. I chose to work in an environment that I now consider toxic, and I'm still there. Mm-hmm. Right? Well, if I'm in that environment, I must be toxic too. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing. We either cast ourselves in the role of the victim or the hero. Mm-hmm. Right? So let's take like the toxic work environment thing. Like, oh, I'm a victim, right? I got to get out of there. So like, I told my manager off and I quit. Now I'm the hero. Mm-hmm. But we never cast ourselves in the role of the villain. Mm-hmm. Because that doesn't fit our model. For instance, you know, you might hear a guy say, "My wife cheated on me. You know, she's horrible. She broke our wedding vows." That's a very powerful story. Mm-hmm. But what you don't hear is somebody saying, "My wife cheated on me because I withheld my love and affection. I drove her into the arms of another man. I am a monster," right? I created the situation, right? But that's partially true. You know, if you're in a relationship and somebody cheats on you, it's pretty rare that everything is going perfect in the relationship and then somebody cheats, right? There's a problem happening. And the cheating is just the most obvious expression of the problem. But you're in the relationship, so you're in that problem too.
What do you say to someone who's in a situation where they're in a perfect relationship and yet they still got cheated?
It's impossible. It doesn't happen. Like
this relationship is too perfect for me, so I'm gonna go and cheat.
You know, if you're in a loving relationship and you are fulfilled, and both partners are fulfilled, then one of them must be a sociopath if they're going to cheat. not really a sociopath, but somebody who has some damage, some very deep buried damage that surfaces.
Right.
But then that's why it happened, right? That's an exploration.
Right. This is great. I want to dive into other aspects of who you are, and I'm interested in, of course, you know, the show is about purpose, and we had a chance to discuss a little bit about what that is to you, and could you share with our audience, with my audience, what that means to you?
Purpose?
Yes.
My purpose is what I'm doing right now, and I am super driven by what I can create. Mm-hmm. And so rather than purpose, because purpose is a conversation, I'm more about being purposeful. Because purposeful means that you're taking action. Dr. King was purposeful. Mm-hmm. Right? He had a purpose and he took action on it. All the luminaries did that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people with purpose that don't do anything. Mm-hmm. Someone might have a strong belief and they're frustrated, mm-hmm. because they don't feel like the belief is being championed out there in the world. Mm-hmm. And they're angry at our leaders because our leaders aren't championing their purpose, you know, what they think is as their purpose, right? And so I'm going to be angry at the president or the governor or somebody, because they're not living in my purpose. So, but when I am purposeful, then I am taking action in the world. So me being purposeful is all about what I refer to as consciousness. And this is what I've been talking about. Being unconscious is saying, "Hey, I'm in this work environment that I don't like. And it's all these things are happening to me because of all these people around me, and I'm being victimized by this situation." That is unconscious. Being conscious is saying, "Hey, if I'm in this situation, then I'm partially responsible for the creation of it. So I either need to remove myself from the situation or I need to change the situation. But if I'm going to remove myself from the situation, I better damn well learn how I got myself into it, because I'm just going to create it somewhere else." Right, so me being purposeful is sharing that message, teaching people, mm-hmm. how to have that level of responsibility, authenticity, the deep dive, the consciousness. And that's why me being purposeful is what I'm doing right now. I'm having this conversation. And these conversations challenge the shit out of a lot of people, because I do get pushback, like, "Oh, you're blaming the victim." It's like, no, there is no victim. There is how you created a situation that you're in. Mm-hmm. And so my being purposeful for me is sharing this. And I do everywhere. I'm on my own podcast, For Badass Entrepreneurs Only, in the work that I do, in the presentations that I give, in the media I put out, and on planes and trains and buses and in line at the grocery store. I'm always having these kinds of conversations. And 90% of the time, people really like the conversations.
How do you get people to be purposeful? Like, what are some of those tactics or tools or mindset shifts that you can share with my audience to get them to be more purposeful?
It's super simple. Just ask people what they want. What do you want? What do you want is the foundational question that I ask of, like, for you, Kong, what do you want? No, what do you want?
Actual question. What do I want? Well,
yeah, what do you want?
Yeah, I want a lot of things.
Cool. Name one of them.
I want to have a successful podcast. My content is I don't want to use the word market, but spread out throughout the world to shed light.
I hear what you're saying is you want to have an impact, a positive impact. Would that be accurate?
That's the end of that.
That is cool. So this is me being purposeful. I asked you what you wanted. I listened. I fed back to you what I heard. And in that, we shared hearts. We made a connection. And so whatever your, let's say that you are a pro-American individual and you're frustrated because you're feeling like America is sliding off the edge and we're not really stepping up as a country. This isn't my thing, but I know for a lot of people, it is their thing. Well, you can get super angry about the president, or you can engage people in conversations like, hey, you know, what do you think about this country? Like, what do you think that we're struggling with most, you know? And instead of telling someone that they're wrong, go, oh, wow, that's, yeah. Can I share with, you know, I was at a farmer's market last year, and there was a booth there of like this super pro-American person, like at the farmer's market. They weren't selling anything other than, and I just went up and started talking to them. Well, I asked them a question, and for 15 minutes, this person talked at me nonstop, didn't ask me one question. Just kept telling me what was wrong with the country and what has to happen. And I was less interested in them after that conversation. I was less interested in their point of view after the conversation than before. Like, they did the exact opposite of what they thought they were trying to do. Because their purpose, you know, was to drive America to what they thought was a better position. Mm-hmm. But they were not purposeful. Mm-hmm. Because they weren't there to share hearts and to be open and to have a conversation. And they were there to just blast me with their point of view.
Yeah. I mean, of course, you know, the 7 habits of highly effective people, one of the habits is seek to understand before being understood.
Mm.
I wonder for those individuals that are out there that are, you know, looking to preach and get people to understand the point of view.
Mm-hmm.
We'll practice that highly effective habit.
Yeah. I met Covey, and man, does he live, you know, his words. You know, I could barely get him to talk about himself. And he was just so interested. And I kept like going, okay, wait, no, hold on. I'm talking about myself again. Like, I want to know more about you. And like, well, you know, like, I did this, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. He goes, well, have you had experience like that? Like, well, yeah, I did this. Like, oh, I'm doing it again. Right. You know? And so it truly is, you know, human beings are designed as a social species. We are designed to be in relationship with each other, and that our highest order is to be connected to each other. You know, like in the movie Castaway with Tom Hanks, he's talking to his soccer ball saying, I'd rather die out there in the ocean trying to find community than live alone here. Mm-hmm. And so we will die if we are not in relationship. Mm-hmm. And yet we are so frightened of being out of relationship that rarely do we open our hearts to do the very thing to create relationship. And sales is all about relationship. Sales is all about being in service, being helpful. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm selling, you know, men's pants, then I want to know why you're buying the pants. Like, is this for a special occasion? What's going on? Like, oh, you know, your daughter's graduation. Wow. Hey, congratulations. Like, what? You know, that must feel great. You know, and you know, whatever it is, your prospect has come to you because they're living in a struggle. Mm-hmm. And their objections is their fear that you're not going to help them with their struggle. So if you think about overcoming objections, then all you're doing is you're exacerbating their fear. You're trying to beat them down. If they have objections and their objections are unrelenting, it's because you suck at making them feel comfortable. So don't beat them up because you're terrible.
Right.
And so I do want to share this. I have something I've written called the 25 responses to help you win any sale. And these are, like I said, these aren't tricks and techniques. They're ways of opening up deeper conversations. And there are lists of these 25 things and there are explanations of how to use them. And there's examples of what to do and what not to do. So to get it, you just text the word responses, R-E-S-P-O-N-S-E-S, text the word responses to this number, 213-409-8366, 213-409-8366, and text the word responses, 213-409-8366, text responses, R-E-S-P-O-N-S-E-S. And with this, there's nothing to, like, you don't, it's free. You don't have to put in your email address or anything. You'll get a link and you'll be able to download these. And my suggestion is use them in conversation, you know, at a party, in meeting someone, on a date, you know, because these are designed to help you get closer to people.
That's great. I'll include that in the show notes so people.
Oh, fantastic.
Take a look into that. Coach Dan, this has been such an incredible conversation with you. Thank you so much again for spending your valuable time with us and sharing some insight. And two questions before I let you go. The next question here is, what inspires you to live purposefully? Hmm. Second question is, where can people find you should they choose to connect with you after this episode?
Okay. So the inspiration is what Bobby Kennedy said, which is, and I'm gonna destroy this, the quote, but the essence of it is, some people see the world as it is and say, why? I see the world as it can be. And I say, why not? I think that's pretty close. And that's what I see. I see all of these problems as infinitely solvable. And I see myself as an agent of change for the world. And I see tremendous opportunity in all places, in all ways, and to inspire hearts and minds and souls. And so this is what I do every day in one form or another. I was up at 5 this morning editing a video of a presentation that I gave. And I do that because I know that people watching that video will be inspired to think differently. Mm-hmm. And to get in touch with me, you can download those responses. There's a link to connect with me. But if you want to have a 15-minute conversation with me, I want to have a 15-minute conversation with you. So just text the word help to that same phone number, 213-409-8366. Text the word help, H-E-L-P, to 213-409-8366. You'll get a link to book a call with me. This just happened yesterday. So in the books that I write, I have that in there. And this woman booked a call with me. I popped on the call. She goes, yeah, I was reading your book and I saw this. She's like, I wanted to know if it was real. Like if you'd really get on a call with me. And she's like, here you are, like the author of this book I've been reading.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, yeah, of course. And we had a great conversation.
That's awesome. Well, Coach Dan, thank you again so much for sharing some valuable information with my listeners. And folks, I encourage you to get in touch with Coach Dan to just have a conversation with him. In any area of your life, you might find something helpful, beneficial, of resource. And so I hope that you folks will share this video with your loved ones and friends and family, and click like and subscribe to my show. Until then, thank you for tuning in.
Thank you, Cole.